Parshas Pinchas. The opening parsha in this week's Seder, in Parshas Pinchas, of course, deals with Pinchas, Ben Elazar, Ben Aaron, HaKohen, and this refers, of course, to the story that we find at the end of Parshas Balak. We all know the story, but the Gemara in Sanhedrin fills us in some of the details that we might not otherwise know. The Torah, of course, describes there was a terrible goings-on in Klal Yisrael. Znus was rampant until he got to even the Nasi of Shevet Shimon, Zimri, who was committing an Avera with Cosby. And the way the Torah describes it is that Pinchas took the law into his own hands, killed Zimri and Cosby, and there ended the terrible Magefa, a huge plague that was ravaging Klal Yisrael, killed 24,000 members of Klal Yisrael. That's all the details that we know, pretty much, reading the Torah. But if you look in the Mishnah and in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, we are told a few more details, and it's these details that I think are well worth discussing for a moment or two. Primarily, the Mishnah tells us that there exists a concept called Kanoim Poigin Boy. Kanoi is what we call somebody who's a zealot. A kanoi poigin boy can take the law into his own hands, which of course is a very, very rare precedent in Klal Yisrael. If I see somebody being mechalel Shabbos, even if I am absolutely convinced without any shadow of a doubt that he was mechalel Shabbos, there's no such thing as killing him on my own volition. I take him to a bezin, there has to be eidin, there has to be a trial, there has to be a mishpat, a psak. Here, all of a sudden, kanoi and poigin boy. Whoever's the kanoi, he can be poigeya. A very, very rare procedure called kanoi and poigin boy. But interestingly enough, the Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin daf pei beis amud aleph, haba limolech. If you would ever come to consult with your local rov, and you would tell him, this is what's going on, should I take the law into my own hands and become a Pinchas? Ein Moirin Cain. We would never sanction it. It doesn't say that we outlaw it, but we can never give you the mandate to go and carry out this halacha called Kanoim Poigin Boy. That's what the Gemara says, and we'll discuss this. So the Gemara tells us what happens. The Gemara said that Zimri wanted to commit the Avera with Cosby. Cosby, of course, was from Midian. So the Gemara says, Tofso Bebluriso, he grabbed her by her hair, dragged her to Moshe Rabbeinu, and said to Moshe Rabbeinu, Ben Amram, spoke to him in the most despicable, non-muchubad way. He says, Ben Amram, tell me, this Isha Cosby, is she permissible, permitted to me, or not permitted, muta or asa? And without even giving Moshe Rabbeinu a chance to respond, he says, and if you tell me that she's forbidden, Bas Yisroi mi hitira lecho. So how did you marry the daughter of Yisroi? She's also from Midian. That's what he said to Moshe Rabbeinu. The Gemara says, Nis'alma mimenu halacha. Moshe Rabbeinu forgot what to do. In all of the turmoil, the halacha evaded him. All of a sudden, the Gemara describes, Pinchas steps forward into the scene. He sees what's going on. He comes up to Moshe Rabbeinu and he said, didn't you teach us a halacha called Kanoim Poigin Boy? And Moshe Rabbeinu tells him the famous words, Kraina de Igrisa Ihu Lahave Pravanka, which translates loosely as, whoever is the one who thought of it should be the one to carry it out. In other words, yes, you trigger my mind, my memory. I now do recall that there is a halacha called Kanoim Poigin Boy. You thought of it, you carry it out. That's the end of the story. Now, there are, I think, a number of halachas, a number of aspects of this Gemara that we need to examine. Firstly, Kanoim Poigin Boy. How do we define a kanoi? What is a kanoi? Zealot. The Rambam writes, Impogu boy kanoim. If the kanoi took the law into his own hands, meshubochim v'zrizim. He's considered highly praiseworthy. So clearly, it's a very recommendable thing. Rashi defines kanoi. Now listen to these words: Bnei Adam Kasherim, people who are kosher, righteous, Hamiskanin Kinosoi Shel Mokim, who are zealots for the purpose of Mokim, who is Mokim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So clearly, we're talking about somebody who is highly praiseworthy, described in the Gemara as Meshubachim by the Rambam, Muzurazim, Kinosei Shel Mokim. So the obvious question being, if it's so recommendable, why did the Gemara say that if you ever are asked by somebody, should they take the law into his own hands, Ein Moirim came, sorry, I'm remaining silent. I'm not saying yes, I'm not saying no. A very peculiar stance. Mamonoshe. If it's the right thing to do, tell him it's a wonderful thing to do. And if it's the wrong thing to do, tell him it's absolutely outlawed. Ein Moirim Kein. What does Ein Moirim Kein mean? We don't pass the malocha. What do they call it? Take the fifth. Take the fifth, finished, I'm remaining silent. It's a very, very strange approach. Where else do we find a precedent like that? Paska mahalocha. And not only paska mahalocha, the psak should be very straightforward. The Rambam says, Muzurozin and Mushubochin, highly praiseworthy. Sorry, I can't say yes, I can't say no. I cannot mandate this course of action. Question number one, why not? Question number two that I think we can ask is that Moshe Rabbeinu forgot the halacha, that's true. But he was reminded afterwards. Pinchas reminded him of the halacha, so why did he then not carry out the halacha himself? What did Moshe Rabbeinu say? You thought of it, you carry it out. Why shouldn't he carry it out? Why did Moshe Rabbeinu not do it? Third question, and a question that we've examined in previous years, as we all know, when the parasha begins with the words Pinchas ben Elozar ben Aharon HaKohen, why is his lineage traced all the way back three generations? We all know the famous Rashi, which is quoting a Gemara, that all of Klal Yisrael, all of the Shvatim, accused, they pointed the accusing finger at Pinchas, and they said, oh, you're the grandson of Yisroel. We know what Yisroel was. Yisroel was initially an idol worshipper. So what does the Torah say? Grandson of Aharon HaKohen. With the obvious question being what? Firstly, what was their taina? You're the grandson of Yisroel. So what? What's that got to do with anything? And if for some reason the Shvatim felt that by virtue of the fact that he was Yisroel's grandson, that precluded him from being Mekayim this halacha, so how to help to turn around and say, yeah, but he's Aharon HaKohen's grandson. What, so he's not Yisroel's grandson? He is. That's a fact of life. You can't take that away. So what is this conversation? He's a grandson of Yisroel. No, he's a grandson of Aaron. What has his lineage got to do with anything? And if it is related to this subject, so how does it help to say, no, he's Aharon HaKohen's grandson. But he is, after all, Yisroel's grandson. You can't take that away. So these are three questions that I think we need to address. Question number one, why is Kanoim Poigim Boy Ein Moirim Kein? Why is it halacha that we don't paskin? Question number two, when Moshe Rabbeinu was eventually reminded of the halacha, why did he himself not carry it out? Third question is, what's this whole discussion, grandson of Yisroel, grandson of Aaron? Let's fast forward for a moment and we'll ask one or two more questions and then we'll try and answer them as well. What happens in next week's parasha, Parashas Matos? HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe Rabbeinu, it's time to seek the vengeance of Klal Yisrael, go and fight against Midian. What's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's terminology? Nekoin, Nikmas, Bnei Yisrael. Seek the vengeance of Klal Yisrael. And Moshe Rabbeinu then relates it to Klal Yisrael, and he switches it, and what does he say? Nekoin, Nikmas, Hashem. Seek the vengeance of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which needs to be explained. Why did he switch it? And furthermore, who ended up going? Who led Klal Yisrael in battle? Not Moshe Rabbeinu. Why not Moshe Rabbeinu? He can't fight against Midian. He has a Koras HaToiv to Midian because they, after all, offered him refuge. So who's second in command? We would have thought the Kohen Gadol. Who was the Kohen Gadol at the time? No longer Aharon HaKohen, his son Elazar. And who ends up going? Pinchas. Why Pinchas? Why Pinchas? So that's our fourth and fifth question. Why did Moshe Rabbeinu switch it and call it Nikoim Nikmas Hashem. And finally, why did Kephas go to battle against Midian? So let's now try and address these questions. And if you'll excuse me, I want to utter a disclaimer before we begin. The disclaimer is that everything we're about to say has to be treated with utmost care. One has to be extremely careful with the subject that we're now going to discuss, which essentially I found in the writings of Reb Chaim Shmulevitz in a number of places. But as you'll see, it's extremely sensitive material and it can be terribly, terribly distorted with horrific ramifications. What is the subject? Imagine I would ask you the following question. You go up to your local Rav and you say, Rabbi, I'd like to eat a piece of chazir. May I? No. Asam in hatayr. Okay, so I won't. You then go to your Rav and you say, listen, Rav, I'd like to eat chazir. But before you tell me no, I'd like to explain to you why I'd like to eat chazir. It's not because I happen to enjoy the taste. Rather, I have a whole cheshbon. There's a group of goyim, or a group of irreligious Jews, who I'm trying to be makariv. And if I sit with them, and I eat with them, and I dine with them, and I join in their suda, even eating chazer, that'd be a tremendous way to be makariv them. So for sure, I'm eating chazer only l'shem shemayim. Not because I enjoy the taste, I happen not to enjoy the taste. The Rav will ask him, how do you know the taste is not good? But either way, I'm not doing it for that reason. I'm doing it to makarev people. L'shem Shemayim! What will the Rav tell you? Nothing to do. Nothing doing. Chas v'shalom. So Issa deraisa, have a nice day. And yet, the Gemara seems to suggest the opposite. There exists a very scary, peculiar sounding concept called an Aveira Lishmo. An Aveira Lishmo. And there was a precedent for it. The Gemara tells us in Nozich of Gimel on the base that when Klal Yisrael once with battle against Sisra, remember the story with Sisra? Yoel, the great righteous Yoel, Eshes HaChover, thought that she could get the better of Sisra. How so? It says that she had relations with Sisra and ended up being able to kill him, and that ultimately defeated Sisra in all of his battle. Says the Gemara, how could you do such a thing? Says the Gemara, Gedoilo Aveira Lishmo. That sounds like you're allowed to do Aveiras if it's the Shem Shemayim. If I have a good cause, I can validate it. It sounds like a Mufurash Gemara, then it's Mutter. That's why I said before the disclaimer. Right, that could be an example. Another example. We normally, as Rabbi Yoel David put it, we normally hold in Jewish law that the ends don't justify the means. And yet we seem to have a Gemara that say the ends absolutely do justify the means. Furthermore, another example. The Gemara says that essentially, why do we have Gemara at all? It's Teira Shebaal Peh, and it should remain Baal Peh. And you're not allowed to write down Teira Shebaal Peh. Came along Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, and he invoked which posuk? The posuk in Tilim which says, Eis la'asois la'shem, heiferu teirosecha. There is a time, la'asois la'shem, heiferu, you can annul the Torah. I'm going to write Torah Shebaal Peh. Why? Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi says, because if I don't write down Torah Shebaal Peh, what's going to happen? It'll be forgotten forever. What does this sound like? Again, an Aveira, but for righteous, noble causes. Do the ends justify the means, or the ends don't justify the means? And there are other Gemaras that suggest a similar line. So Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, in a very, very fundamental shmu, says, how can this be the case? And I'll tell you the way he presents the question. Yaakov Avinu married two sisters. Do you know that Moshe Rabbeinu's parents were related to each other? Aunt and nephew? So how did they marry each other? The answer was, because it was prior to Matan Torah. Says Reb Chaim Volozhin, prior to Matan Torah, even though these Gedolei Olam, essentially they kept the Torah, But if they saw with their great chokhmah or with ruach hakodesh that what? That there is positive reason to marry a relation, then they would marry a relation. Yaakov Avinu, Beroiv Chochmosoi, Beroiv Gadlusoi, saw fit to marry two sisters. Amram married his aunt. And indeed, look what happened. They produced the Shvatim, and they produced Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam. Says Rav Chaim Volozhin, but you know where the watershed is? Matan Torah. All of that is fine and wonderful before Matan Torah. Then you can make all of these cheshbonos. It is worth it and it's not worth it. After Matan Torah, these cheshbonos do not exist. If somebody has valid cause, as it were, to marry two sisters, you don't marry two sisters. And if somebody wants to marry his aunt for all the noble intentions in the world, it's aser. So ask Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, I don't understand. So how do we learn these gemaras? Rav Yehuda Anasi was after Matan Torah. Esther was after Matan Torah. Yoel was after Matan Torah. What's going on? Are you allowed to be over an Avera Lishma? So Rav Chaim Shmulevitz says, and here this is the principle, and this is the story that I'd like to mention tonight. Rav Chaim Shmulevitz says, the answer lies in one line of Gemara, over there, in Nozir, whilst discussing the story with Yoel and Sisra. And the Gemara asks a question, how indeed could she commit this Avera? At the end of the day, she's benefiting from it, she's enjoying the Avera. And you know what the Gemara answers? Because she was so righteous, and because he was so wicked, she had zero hana'a from the Avera whatsoever. That's what the Gemara says. Says Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, that's the answer to our question. Is an Avera Lishma, does that concept exist? The answer is, in theory, yes. But there is a huge, huge Tanai and condition attached. And what is that? That it has to be 100% L'Shem Shemayim. And if it's 99.99% Hashem Shemayim, then it's absolutely awesome midoraisa. Which means, therefore, in practice, this halacha is totally irrelevant for us. Who's to say, who can honestly hold his hands up and say, yeah, I was committing this Avera and I only had a Kadosh Baruch Hu's honor in mind? Yoel, Eisha Sachava, apparently she was on a Madrega that she could say that. So the Gemara says she had no hana, and that means no hana. It was 100% Hashem Shemayim. Then and only then there exists this phenomenal chiddush called Aveir Lishma. But under any other circumstances, not only is it not muta, it's absolutely osa b'tachlis or issa, issa do iraisa. Let's move on to a similar type of example. If I were to ask you to take revenge, is that a good thing or a bad thing? We'd all say it's a bad thing. Obviously, it's a deraisa. Torah says lo isikrim. So Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, in a different shmuz, addresses a very puzzling story. What happened with Shimi ben Gera? Shimi ben Gera curses David HaMelech in a terrible way. And how does David HaMelech respond? He doesn't respond. Do nothing. David HaMelech is on his deathbed, knocking on death's door, and he calls in his son Shlomo HaMelech, and he says, you remember what Shimi ben Gera did to me. I want you to take care of him. And eventually he did. That's a whole story into itself. In fact, we once discussed it in the Shiher, how he dealt with Shimi ben Gera. He told him not to leave Yerushalayim, and he did Yerushalayim, and eventually put him to death. And Rav Chaim Shmulevitz asks the obvious question. Now is the time to seek revenge. David HaMelech is on his deathbed. David Melech Yisrael, Chai V'Kayim. Now he thinks, well, now I'm going to get the last laugh. Now is the time to seek revenge. Says Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, and this is the way he writes it. He says, anybody who asks that question doesn't understand what true revenge is. Meaning, how do we view revenge? Do you know how we review revenge? Basically, getting our own back. As Chazal say, you didn't lend me a spade, I'm not lending you a shovel. I gain nothing by not lending you a shovel. Except, I feel good about it now. Ah, I got the last laugh. You didn't lend me money, I'm not lending you money. It's getting my own back. Says Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, that's nekoma in our terms. True nekoma is the highest level of tzidkus. There is a pasuk, it calls HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Gemara in Bracha, it says, Gedoyle nekoma. Nekoma is very great. It says, Kael nekomois Hashem. HaKadosh Baruch Hu seeks revenge. It says Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, let's define revenge properly. Not the way we define revenge. We define revenge, and indeed that's outlawed by the Torah, as getting our own back. That's awesome. Do you know what the real definition of nekoma is? Says Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, the real definition of nekoma is seeking absolute justice. That's nekoma. If you seek absolute justice in this world, that's a tremendous Kiddush Hashem. That's a tremendous Kiddush Hashem. Imagine if you would see Shabbos afternoon, an irreligious Jew who knows full well it's usher to drive, and he gets in his car and he drives down the main street in Ramat Beit Shemesh. And it bothers you, it pains you greatly. Imagine a bolt of lightning, all of a sudden would emerge from heaven, zap him, burn him to a crisp. That would be nekoma. Meaning, absolute justice. There was a Chilul Hashem, there's a Kiddush Hashem. When I tell my friend I'm not lending you the shovel because you didn't lend me my spade, what am I thinking of? Justice and Kiddush Hashem? It's the last thing I'm thinking of. What am I thinking of? I'm getting my own back. I'll have the last laugh. Says Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, David HaMelech his whole life didn't take revenge from Shimi ben Gera. Why? Because he was worried. Maybe I've got my own agenda at heart. Maybe I'm really taking care of Shimon ben Gera, as it were, to get my own back. When can David HaMelech be rest assured that he has no ulterior motive? When he's about to leave this planet. Now I can be convinced. He tells his son Shlomo HaMelech, now's the right time to take Nakoma. Absolute justice. Somebody who's Mekalel, the Melech, he needs to be put to death. But I've got to be sure that my motives are 100% pure. 100% pure. In fact, the Gemara says a Talmud Chochem is supposed to take revenge. Do you know how he's supposed to take revenge? Like a snake. The Gemara says, if any Talmud Chochem doesn't take revenge like a snake, he's not a Talmud Chochem. Why a snake? When a snake eats, does he enjoy his food? No, because it all tastes of earth. Say the Mefarshim of Talmud Chochem has to take revenge like a snake. Meaning, no personal benefit. I'm not doing it for me. So this, of course, is very similar, therefore, to the first principle we discussed. The concept of an Aveira, L'Shem Shomayim, but on condition that what? That it really is L'Shem Shomayim. A Talmud Chochem can be assured, but the rest of us can't be. Now let's come back to the final example, and this is our parasha. Kanos! Zealotry! You see Cosby and Zimri in the street. Can you take the law into your own hands? Says Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, yes, but. What's the but? What's the condition? Is it L'Shem Shomayim? Are you killing Zimri and Cosby 100%? Not 99. Not 99.99 either. Is it 100% L'Shem Shomayim? Then it's the greatest Kiddush Hashem. But if you have any other type of ulterior motive, then you are a Reitzeach. You're a murderer. Do you know what Reb Chaim Briska says? Have you ever had a mouse in your house? I have, and it's not fun. So your wife runs after the mouse for all she's worth. Says Reb Chaim Briska, there's a very big difference between a housewife running after a mouse and a cat running after the mouse. Do you know what the difference is? The housewife just wants this mouse out the house, but the cat enjoys the chase. Says Reb Chaim Brisker, Kanos has to be like the housewife, not like the cat. Meaning, I'm not doing it because I enjoy the chase and because it's fun. I want this out the way. I cannot bear to have this over here. That is what the Rambam means, that if somebody is a true Kanoi, he's Meshubachin and he's Muzurazin, he's highly praiseworthy. Why? Because what ultimately motivates him? Kiddush Hashem. But remember what Rashi said? What's the true Kanoi? Somebody who is Miskane Bekin Osoi Shel Mokoim. Somebody who is motivated only by Kiddush Hashem and Chilul Hashem. That's the true Kanoi. I think Merav Rabbi said, if we come back, we'll see now, all of our questions are answered. But again, I repeat the disclaimer that I mentioned before. You can see how dangerous this can be. If somebody misinterprets it, you can be over every Aveira in the book. It's all Hashem Shemayim. Do you know what the Kotzker Rebbe once said? The Kotzker Rebbe was very famous for his very sharp one-liners. It says in the Mishnah in Ovos, make sure that kol ma'asecha, all of your deeds are Hashem Shemayim. Why must it say kol? All of your deeds. Why can't it just say, make sure that ma'asecha l'shem shamayim? What does kol come to include? Do you know what the Kotzker Rebbe says? Do you know what kol comes to include? It comes to include even when you act l'shem shamayim. Make sure that that's also l'shem shamayim. It's very easy to wave the banner of l'shem shamayim. Of course, it's not for me, as he slips the $10,000 check into his back pocket. It's all about Kiddush Hashem. Says the Kotzker Rebbe, just make sure that all of your deeds, make sure that even your Shem Shemayim is really your Shem Shemayim. Therefore, Aveira Lishma, indeed, is a very, very lofty concept, but for all intents and purposes, not relevant to us. It can only be applicable to the daily Olam. Let's come back now, and we'll see that all of our questions, I think, are answered. Is Kanoim Poigim Boy a lofty Madrega? Absolutely yes. So we asked, why when you come to ask your Rav, Ein Meirin Kein? The Rav will never sanction it. You know what the answer is? Because how can I know what your intentions are? I cannot say yes. I cannot say no. Because Kanoim Poigimoy is a wonderful thing. Look what happened to Pinchas. He ended up being a Kohen forevermore as a result of Kanos. Truly, surely, it's a very, very great thing. But I can't sanction it. Why? Because there is an enormous precondition attached, which is, it has to be 1,000% Hashem Shemayim. Who's to say you're acting Hashem Shemayim? That's why it's Ein Meirin Kein. Our second question was, why didn't Moshe Rabbeinu be Mekayem Halacha himself? Why didn't he go and kill Zimri? Maybe because Zimri had just embarrassed him highly. Zimri had just said to him, excuse me, if I can't marry Cosby, how did you end up marrying Sipora? So maybe, I don't know, maybe Moshe Rabbeinu thought to himself, therefore I'm disqualified. Because a Kanoi can only be a Kanoi if he has no ulterior motive, no agenda. He says, well, you better go and do it. And what was our third question? What did the Shvatim tell him? You're the grandson of Yisrael. No, he's the grandson of Aaron. What's your grandfather got to do with it? The Shvatim were telling him, we know what your roots are. You're the grandson of an Oyved Aveda Zorah, and who says therefore your intentions were pure? Kanoim Poigimboy. Who says your intentions were pure? Kanoim Poigimboy is a wonderful thing, but only for Hashem Shemayim. What's really motivating you? Says the Torah, it wasn't his lineage from Yisro that motivated him. Don't think he's a murderer. He's a grandson of Aaron HaKohen. Aaron HaKohen is the Oyev Sholem Redef Sholem. The last thing that you could accuse Aaron HaKohen of being is a murderer. To the contrary, he's the ultimate peacemaker. Therefore, what was really motivating Pinchas, as the Torah describes, it was his lineage of Aaron HaKohen. And that's what the Torah writes in this week's parasha. Do you know why I'm making him into a Kohen? Bekanoi es kinosi. Because he was concerned about one thing and one thing only. What was that? Kovod Shem Shemayim.
Question. I don't understand this wasn't the question at the beginning. Because what Zimri said, he did the act of killing Cosby and Zimri.
Good question. Have you listened to the shiur that we gave 2 years ago? If not, I'll send it to you, Blue Nader. We asked this very question. What was their timer? They saw 24,000 people died, and on the spot they stopped dying. So isn't that the greatest riot that he did the right thing? I'll send you a shiur we gave about this a few years ago. Let's just say in conclusion that we can now understand Parashas Matos. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Nekoim Nikmas Yisrael, take revenge. What does Moshe Rabbeinu do? Just changes the Lashon. Nekoim Nikmas Hashem. Nekoma is a tremendous thing, but don't forget the condition. It's got to be Nekoim Nikmas Hashem. And what does Moshe Rabbeinu decide? Who's he going to send? Pinchas. He knows what it means. He knows what it means to take care of Kavod Shemayim. How do I know? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu corroborated it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says he's a Kohen forever. He is the worthy representative of Klal Yisrael to go and battle against the Midian. So I think therefore we've really answered all of our 5 questions. Why is it a halacha which you cannot paskin? Because we don't know the intentions of the Kanoi. Why did Moshe Rabbeinu not want to carry it out? Because maybe he was worried he's got some ulterior motive. What's this Aaron HaKohen Yisrael Zayda got to do with it? The question is, which Midah is really motivating you? Is it L'Shem Shomayim or not? Nekoim Nikmas Hashem, it has to be L'Shem Shomayim. And finally, Pinchas therefore is the ultimate representative. He is the worthy candidate to lead Klal Yisrael to battle as they seek revenge against Klal Yisrael. I just want to finish off with the following line. I once heard, there's a letter written by Rav Menachem Zember, Hashem Yimkoim Domei. Rav Menachem Zember was one of the Ge'ani Ge'oin, absolute Goyim Adid, big Talmud Chacham in times of the war in Warsaw, and he was killed tragically by the Nazis. Hashem Yimkoim Domei. It was a Gera Chassid. Goyim Oilim, we have Sforim from Nachum Zember, tremendous, tremendous fun. The Warsaw Ghetto Uprising. They decided, they knew full well, that there's no chance they can overcome and be victorious over the Nazi and Polish oppressors. But a group of Yidden decided that they're going to have an uprising against them anyway. And they asked from Nachum Zember, Lahalocha, is this mutter or is it not mutter? Taking revenge. For what purpose? So Rabbi Nachum Zember wrote a letter, and we have a recording of this letter. And Rabbi Nachum Zember writes, he says, I've always thought about the Issa of Nekama. Revenge. Is it as a positive thing or a negative thing? The Torah says, Lo Sikoim, you don't have to take revenge. And yet, Nekoim Nikmas, go and take revenge. Was it a good thing or was it a bad thing? Rav Nachum Zember said, I reached the inescapable conclusion that it all depends what your intention is. Im ha-nekim, if the one taking revenge is mischaving la'atzmoy for himself just to get his own back, then of course it's absolutely apprehensible. Totally outlawed. Even against the good. Because it's not for the purpose of L'Shem Shomayim. If, however, it's Nekoim Nikmas Hashem, which was also against Goim, Midianites, then it's a very, very worthy cause. So Rav Nachum Zember said in conclusion, I have no doubt that this Warsaw Ghetto uprising, nobody has an element of doubt, nobody has even a possibility, nobody's entertaining the possibility that we're doing this to get revenge or to get the better of them, because we know we can't get the better of them. And ultimately, tragically, they were all killed out. All of Klal Yisrael there in the Warsaw Ghetto. So I'm convinced, he writes, B'chiddush, I'm convinced that anybody who's being involved with this is only being nekim leman kvoid Hashem. There was a tremendous chilul Hashem, all the oppression against Klal Yisrael, and therefore I have no shadow of a doubt, says Rav Nachum Zember, that what? Anybody who wants to get involved only has one concern in mind, and that is L'Shem Shemayim. And on that basis, I'm sanctioning it, and I'm giving you the go-ahead, and on that basis, they did, they went ahead with it. Even though, of course, the results were tragic, as was predicted. So therefore, this is really the essay. And as I mentioned, and you'll excuse me, I just feel I have to stress this again. We have to be very, very careful not to chas v'shalom, distort this. You can imagine, aveir l'shma, suddenly the doors are open, you can be over whatever you like under the banner of l'shem shamayim. We must remember the Kotzke Rebbe. We have to make sure that even our l'shem shamayim is also l'shem shamayim. Remember, my father once told me, he heard from Chaim Shmulevitz, he says, sometimes l'shem shamayim can be the greatest yetzer hara. It's all l'shem shamayim, I can do whatever I like. No, it's got to be, as Rashi points out, kinosei shel mokim, nekoyim nikmas Hashem. If indeed that's the case, as it was with Pinchas, bekano yes kinosi, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, that indeed is mizrozim umushubochim, and that's why he was zeicha to kahuna lo'ilam void.